Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zahra Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Thanks for joining us. And we've got two special guests. And we're going to start out here first with an in-studio guest. I'd like to welcome Laura Penny, who's Executive Director of the Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona. Welcome to the studio, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, a real pleasure. Well, let me give a brief introduction. Ordinarily, I introduce our guests as being a native of, and she just filled in Air Force. So I means, of course, that Laura spent quite a bit of her youth traveling around, posted with her family involved in the Air Force. And she's lived here in Tucson for over 30 years, spending many of those years advocating on behalf of women as a volunteer for a variety of organizations, such as the Arizona Women's Political Caucus, Wingspan, and Planned Parenthood. Back with an education in psychology and counseling, Laura's career traversed criminal justice, behavioral health, and education arenas in roles such as being a probation officer, a case manager, and a chief policy for the state school superintendent. These experiences gave her the insights into the primary area of her current career passion, addressing the formidable challenges faced by women and girls to overcome economic, social, gender, and political barriers. Laura joined the Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona in July of 2004, so she's had 6 years in the saddle, as executive director, and during her tenure, the foundation has granted nearly $800,000 to Southern Arizona nonprofits serving thousands of women and girls. So thank you again so much for what you're doing for women these days, Laura.
It's a lot of fun.
Is it
It's
really?
A lot of fun.
Well, tell us about the background of the foundation. How long has it been around?
It was started by two women philanthropists in the early 90s, made their first grants in 1993. And these were two women who felt that institutional philanthropy was shortchanging women, that women were disproportionately affected by poverty, health issues, violence, and that most of the private funding that was going into communities, nonprofits, was not directed at women. It was not getting at the root cause of what the real problems were.
And these two philanthropists, then, the idea of setting up then a community foundation, you might want to inform our listeners, what is a community foundation?
Well, in our case, where oftentimes community foundations are prescribed by geography, so a city or a region, we are a community foundation prescribed by gender. And so we are the recipients of funds that we in turn grant back into the community through a grant-making process that involves the entire community.
So that your benefactors then, are they individuals and philanthropists as the two women that started it, but as well national organizations that look for places to put blocks of money?
We do get funding from out of state as well. Most of our money comes from individual donors. We have some corporate partners that we appreciate very much. And we do get some money from family foundations as well.
Fantastic. For those of you who are on the web, by the way, you can go to Laura's site. It's www.womengiving. That's womengiving.org. And also our lines are open for anyone who'd like to engage in our conversation. Locally, it's 751-1041 or toll-free, it's 877-544-2580. Laura, your foundation is unique, though. I know right before we started on there, I asked how big your staff was, and you said?
Two people.
And that's by design, right?
That is by design. The lower we can keep our overhead, the more money we have to invest back in the community. And since that's our reason for being, we have very modest offices, and we have two people who wear multiple hats so that more of the money that we raise can go back into helping women and girls in Southern Arizona.
That's right. And how would you say, though, with the two of you, what number of volunteers or other people that are really chipping in time and energy to help you with what you do?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we couldn't manage without volunteers. I mean, there's obviously a board. There are committees. There are people who put on events for us. You know, we easily have between 50 and 100 active volunteers who have specific roles in the organization.
And many of them have been involved with you for many years then?
Absolutely.
That's nice.
Absolutely.
That's really that consistency. Well, tell us about the makeup of your board then and how the different skill sets they bring to the party or how you rely upon them as an executive director.
Well, obviously, the first skill set they need to bring to the board is a passion for women and girls and improving the status of women and girls. But, you know, I don't think our board is that different than many other, nonprofit boards in that we have a need for people with marketing skills and financial acumen and people who are going to be ambassadors for the organization out in the community.
Yeah. You know, we often talk, in fact, we didn't host this week, but in previous weeks, twice a month, we have individuals from the Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group, which is a search organization based out of Boston. And we talk a lot about people who are shifting careers or want to. And the first place they always advise, myself included, is to get involved in an organization such as yours to see if this makes sense to deploy your for-profit skills or, you know, experiences you have otherwise. So I see that you're the benefit of that, of course, in the makeup of your board, I imagine.
Absolutely. And I mean, a lot of these people are not necessarily looking to change careers, but Tucson is a very generous community.
Indeed.
And they feel a commitment to give back.
That's right. Well, what makes the Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona unique compared to other community-funded nonprofit boards?
Well, we don't offer, we have one program that we run in-house, and the rest of what we do is try to provide support to other nonprofit organizations, either financial support or one of the things that we've done the last couple years is produce a report on the status of women and girls in Southern Arizona. And this is useful not only to policymakers and people who just have an interest in the topic, it's also useful to the nonprofits because whenever you apply for a grant, the first question is always document the need. And through these reports, which have hard data and statistics in them, the applicants have the information at their fingertips.
So your in-house program that you offer, is it indeed related to grant writing then?
Yes, it is actually.
I pinned that one.
It is a girls leadership and philanthropy program, and it is so inspiring. We bring together high school age girls from all across the community. Some of them come from very privileged backgrounds. Some of them come from much more chaotic backgrounds. And they come together as a team. They learn about social justice issues affecting girls in the community. They determine a funding focus. They write an RFP, they review proposals when they come in, and they ultimately determine a grant award of up to $10,000.
My goodness, so it's a real life case study and opportunity to then go do good work with the funding.
Absolutely, and they talk about feeling like they can make a difference in
right.
the community.
Exactly. And to give the girls, to give back to girls, that's a lifetime experience that I'm certain some way, somehow, that's going to fold into their pursuing their own careers or additional avocations.
Well, it's interesting. We actually did a little longitudinal study of all the girls who had participated in the program. Didn't get 100% response rate, but of the girls we did hear from, 100% of them were still in school. 90% of them were involved in some kind of philanthropic activity, whether it was serving on their student council or in a leadership at a sorority. But some of them were doing amazing things like saving Darfur and going to South America and teaching English. And of those girls, 90% of them, and of those, 95% of them attributed their continued involvement in philanthropic activities to their participation in our program.
So this idea of you scaling up, that's what you're doing. You're looking for a way to scale up and create additional advocates in that space.
Absolutely. And teaching girls that they can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, talk to us about some of the success stories then of the ripple effect, the actual where your $800,000 has gone to, and perhaps speak on behalf of some of the organizations that have benefited from your financial support and guidance.
Oh, yeah. There's just great work being done in this community. One of the things that we did last year is we decided that an annual grants process, while helpful, didn't allow for long-term planning and the kind of social change that we're interested in seeing. So we funded two organizations who are doing exemplary work in the area of women's economic self-sufficiency. One of those has been on your show, I think, New Beginnings for Women and Children.
Yes.
The other is an organization called the Primavera Foundation. And they have this amazing program where they bring in women. They teach them budgeting and financial skills. They teach them about home mortgages, loan processes. And in one case, they had a woman who was pennies on the hour short of qualifying for a loan. So they sat down and taught her negotiation skills so she could go in, negotiate with her employer for a raise, and then get her income up to a level where she qualified for a loan.
Oh, yeah.
This program has a 0% default rate.
Because you're getting individuals that now are really committed in turning that funds. You hear that about individuals in the whole microfinancing sector, that unlike typical bank loans in the process that have a reasonably high default, you see people that get in microfinancing that, hey, I'm just looking for that $600 to start my home-based business or my community-backed, whatever the case may be, that the commitment and passion and then the desire to give it back and cause a ripple effect is so strong.
And, you know, I think actually in this country, we're catching up with things that have been proven.
Yes.
in the developing world. I mean, Grameen Bank, which founded microcredit, their best customers are women. You saw in the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti, they were giving the rice to the women. Because they weren't black market profiteering it. They were making sure that kids got fed. And so we think that investing in women is not just a feel-good enterprise. It makes economic sense, mm-hmm. because they are often the ones who are responsible for family finances.
You bet. Now, I had said in the introduction that your goal and your passion around women and girls is to help them overcome economic, which you just mentioned, mm-hmm. that social, gender, and political barriers. So maybe take us into some of the things that you feel your foundation is helping in that whole social, gender, and political barrier area.
Boy.
It's hard to separate the four, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, they are intertwined. We have funded programs in town designed to get women registered to vote and then to get them to the polls. And typically those have targeted groups that have been marginalized in the political process. So one organization, Las Adelitas, that was looking to register and empower Latinas.
Mm-hmm.
Grant went to an organization called Wingspan. We've had a couple ballot measures that people felt were discriminatory against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. And Wingspan mobilized to get that community registered to vote and then to turn out and vote in their own interest.
So that the funding that your foundation provided enabled communication techniques, and what type of funding would you see go in that way to help?
Community organizing.
There we go, yeah.
Absolutely. Community organizing, tabling at events, public outreach, knocking on doors. Again, not in support of a particular candidate. We can't do that, but just to get people engaged in the process.
And also in the topics, the relevant topics, that's so important. The whole idea of the social side then, you're talking about, you know, you used the word, in fact, earlier, of the level playing field. So a part of that, of course, comes back to education and self-esteem building, does it not, for women? I mean, I had a guest come on our show. She wrote a great book. It's called It's Not Necessarily the Glass Ceiling, It's a Sticky Floor. So the point being is that are there things that we women, for whatever reason, do to get in our own way? And some of the education programs and the like, some of your benefactors finding, or the organizations to whom you gift the money, finding that way to flip that switch and get women into more personally empowered place?
And the trick is obviously starting with girls.
Yeah,
and, you know, one of the great programs that we funded was a program at the Bio5 Institute at the University of Arizona.
Tell us more.
Yeah, it uses female undergrads to go out into elementary, middle school classrooms and teach girls that science is fun. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You don't have to be a geek with a, you know, white lab coat and a pocket protector to be a scientist. And they have engaged so many girls in in science and opened up a whole world of possibilities for them. I mean, you're an engineer, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And how many women were there in your engineering?
I was one of 75 in almost all my classes, even in my senior year.
Exactly.
Yes. And in my case, of course, I had the benefit, though, of parents who wouldn't have known to tell me anything different but say, have you ever thought about engineering because of my love of math and science?
Yeah. Right.
But it hadn't been for that influence. In fact, what you find is many women in our baby boomer generation is what supported them the most in pursuing the sciences and engineering was indeed a family figure. And if you have a look at today's demographics, that the families don't have that kind of balance or opportunity, it takes an outside force, like you're suggesting here with your programs.
Right. And if you have parents who aren't educated, they may not even know what an engineer does, mm-hmm. or have a clear concept of encouraging a daughter to go into that field.
That's right. Well, let me shift now to you personally and your choice to step out of the social services broader justice system, I'll call it. The decision for you to step in and become a leader inside of a nonprofit. Granted, you had already had a lot of volunteer experience, but it's another thing to actually flip over. And your thought process you went through, was it something you kind of just fell into, or you actively pursued, or was there a plan?
Oh, I think I have to defer to Rudy about, preparation and opportunity. It just came at a time in my life when I was looking to do something different. And actually, my reaction was, I've been doing this as a volunteer for years. You mean somebody would actually pay me to do this?
Yeah.
And, it was just seemed like the perfect opportunity and a way to marry all the things that I had learned in the various systems I'd worked in toward an ultimate goal of helping women and girls.
When you look at those first 6 months, though, because you stepped right in as an executive director, correct? So what were some of the surprises, though, the things that weren't in the brochure, I call it, that perhaps some of our listeners that might be thinking about making a major jump into the nonprofit would benefit from your advice?
Be sure you look at the financial statements.
Yeah, isn't that true?
Yeah. When I came into the foundation, they had a couple of troubled years. And in fact, there was a deficit the year before I was hired. And so my first job was to raise the money to sustain the work. And, I think that's often the case in nonprofit organizations. But I do think that for anybody who's considering making a shift into the nonprofit world, the financial statements are just as important as they are in the for-profit world. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't buy a business without looking at the financials. You need to do that for the not-for-profit, too.
You mentioned earlier this idea that you and your colleague that you've got the jack of all trades. Wouldn't you say that's another piece of it? As you join nonprofits, you need to be prepared that there aren't a whole lot of people to delegate to, even if you have a cultivated, nice base of volunteers, but that suddenly the challenge of having to be this 1 hour and that another hour.
Oh, we joke about that all the time. When we're standing at the copier, we laugh about, this is why we're making the big bucks,
Right. Which, by the way, I've always said is that the management of the mundane is what keeps the business going. So that doesn't, you can never underestimate that. But if you think about what your days have become as a leader, vis-a-vis what you were doing prior, working, with a state school superintendent, case manager, probation officer, and so on. Any real surprises that you caught walking into this now in hindsight, having been in this role for 6 years?
I think I had an image of leaders as being decisive decision makers. And one of the things I found that's most important is the ability to listen.
Mm-hmm. And listen, meaning in your case, of course, to your volunteers, but also listen to people who might become funders and see how you can hook on to them in a positive way.
Listen to the community and listen to the nonprofit organizations that we work with. They are the best source of feedback to us about how we do our business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how has the nonprofit frontier changed in the 6 years you've been serving it here in Tucson?
Well, there's a lot more of them.
Okay.
It's a proliferating industry.
Yeah, is that not a challenge, though? I think that's one area that our side of the state gets criticized for compared to other places around the country. It actually confuses us that those of us that want to become active benefactors because you don't quite know which of the five that are in a certain set would be of the highest impact for the dollars I would give.
Yeah, I mean, I hear this argument a lot, but I have to say that for all the nonprofits there are in Tucson, there are still thousands of people in need and not being served. So, and I don't know in this case that better is always bigger. There are organizations that are better at serving one niche of the community than another.
The fact that you've sum totaled, worked at $800,000, you know, over the years of your tenure, how do you see that going forward now? I mean, I feel personally the social consciousness is really raised in people, of particularly of the younger generations, recognizing the power of engagement. But then we have this other dragon over here called the economic downturn. So is there a medium, or do you find things stabilizing in terms of your ability to continue to do the great work that you're doing?
You know, I approach this work from an abundance model.
Right.
And, you know, I think if we get into a scarcity mentality and that think that we're all in competition for the same dollars, it's hugely detrimental to the work and to the community. And so I just choose to approach this work from a position of abundance. And so far, the community has responded.
Has responded. That's lovely. Is there anything, though, you do differently in terms of your own career preparation to serve in the role that you're in now?
Ooh.
You know, I think that just like our previous guest, Rudy Beck, the fact that you've worked, you know, in such a variety of criminal justice, behavior, health, and education arenas, that's obviously serving you so very well. But is there anything you think in hindsight, gee, if I'd only done X, Y, Z?
You know, I'm not really sure. I guess we don't know what we don't know.
No, no. Which almost is healthy, right? Because then you just go forward and say, fine, we can do that.
We'll figure this out.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
You're having, though, lived and grown up in a family impacted or connected with the military and the Air Force and lived across so many different places. I have to believe that opened your mind and perspectives to be a little bit more fearless than maybe the average bear that grows up in one environment.
I think what it taught me is carpe diem. You know, we have today. And, you know, my best friend today could be shipped off tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, you really have to seize the opportunities when they present themselves.
That's right. Well, again, thank you very much, Laura Penny, for joining us here today on Circles of Change. Laura, again, is Executive Director of the Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona. You'd like to share your website and, of course, a call to arms for anyone who'd like to donate?
Absolutely. It's womengiving.org, and there's also places there where you can contact us to volunteer.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Great.